Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 84 of Season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Todd Liebenow. Welcome back to the show, Todd.
Thank you, Rob. We will find this bomb eventually here.
Eventually. We'll have to wait and see where it is. Who knows? So minute 84 begins with Simon updating Mills and ends with Targo wanting to finally end things. So yesterday we ended things with Simon getting his radio and telling Mills and Klaus, who were in the final truck, that they can come closer now. So the minute begins with Simon saying, "Nils, you can close in now." And he goes, "Nils?" And then, typical John McClane fashion, we get him driving, holding his walkie-talkie in one hand. And he goes, attention, Nils is dead. I repeat, Nils is dead, kid. So's his pal. And those four guys from the East German All-Stars, your boys down at the bank, they're going to be a little late.
This is one of those, you know, there's always got to be a moment in the Die Hard movies where McClane gets to talk to the bad guys over walkie-talkie or whatever. And this is a fun moment when it comes to that kind of thing.
Yeah. I love how he's like recapping to... you know, to Simon that he killed six of his guys. You know, that's what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. He's like, all right, I took care of these two guys here, and I took care of those four guys there. And, you know, and Simon takes it with stride. You know, we see that there's no anger in his voice as he responds. And he goes, John, in the back of the truck you're driving, there's $13 billion worth in gold bullion. I wonder, would a deal be out of the question?
Do you think he'd actually let John drive away with it, though? I mean, you know, he's gonna come after him if he does take it. I mean, I don't think he's legitimately asking the question, but still.
You think it's a stall method?
Well, yeah, I don't know what I mean, because I think he's just kind of trying to, I don't know, humor him or something like that. You know, just come back with a funny response or something like that, because I don't think he really thinks that John would accept an offer from him. But even if he did, let's say John just put all his morals aside and drove off with the money, I don't think Simon's going to let him get away.
Okay, probably not. Now, do you remember when they robbed the Federal Reserve? Do you remember how much gold they said is there that they're stealing?
I do not.
Okay. Now, if John has $13 billion worth in his truck, okay, and there are 14 trucks, so that comes out to $182 billion. Because I'm assuming that mm-hmm. they, you know, if Simon's making a comment like this, it means that they evenly distributed as much as they could.
Yeah.
Okay. Approximately. You know, I doubt it's, you know, I doubt they were sitting there counting gold bars and saying, okay, this one has, you know, 1,236 gold bars here and 1,236 or whatever the number is.
Oh, you underestimate Simon, man. He's got a clipboard. He keeps track of it all. No, probably not.
It's very possible, but, you know, they knew they had a little bit of time, but, I don't know about that. So he basically says to John that there's $13 billion in the back. But when they went to rob the place, they said there was $140 billion, which means there's a $42 billion discrepancy here.
So we're at 42 less than what it should be?
No, we're at 42.
We're more.
If there's 42 if there's more. $13 billion, right. If there's $13 billion in John's truck, then we are 14. Then we're $42 billion more.
So... Simon's got some in his pockets. I don't know.
You know, my guess is that they were keeping track very well, like you said, and they realized that they had more money than they originally thought they would.
Yeah, I suppose that's possible.
You know, I mean, that's the only explanation, unless he decided to give Nils a larger share.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe Nils earned a bonus this year. I don't know. But then he ended up dead. So what good did it do him?
Yeah, but he was taking the drag position in the rear. So
yeah,
you never know. Maybe that's more dangerous. So therefore he pays them a little bit more about it. Yeah, I don't know. But Simon basically says something very interesting, you know, in the way that he says this. He's basically saying to John, I don't care about you anymore. You know, I was just having fun and I was going to try and kill you. But, you know, hey, if you'll take the $13 billion and let me go, then we're good.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that you said before, that he probably will hunt John down because it sounds as if John's going to take the money and run with it. He's going to take it and, you know, give it back to the Federal Reserve or whatever it is.
Right, right.
You know, so it sounds as if he now needs to go, you know, find John and find the $13 billion that he stole. That $13 billion is gone.
Yeah.
So maybe that's part of Simon's decision. He goes, okay, I got $42 billion more than I thought. So, okay, what's $13 billion less?
Yeah. It's like, I can live without a few more ivory back scratchers, I guess.
There you go. He's you know, he does the math. So, okay, I'll have $169 billion instead of $140 that I thought I would have. You know, it's still $29 billion more.
Yeah, yeah. What's a billion here or there?
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, basically he gives Simon's very inconsistent here from that perspective about whether, you know, what is his main goal here? Is his goal to be a thief? Is his goal to enact revenge on John? Is it a combination of the both? Which is more important to him? You know, which is he willing to give up on, and which one is he, you know, going to be adamant about?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obviously we don't know the answer, and we never will know the answer, because it's left somewhat ambiguous here with that, from that perspective.
Yeah.
John once again has a response for him, and he goes, yeah, I got a deal for you. Crawl out from under that rock you're hiding under, and I'll drive this truck up your ass.
Which is a great McLean comeback, but I actually like Simon's comeback to that even better.
Yes. How colorful.
How colorful. Which is just, it's not even just, you know, great, you know, for Simon. It's just, it feels like a Jeremy Irons type of line. Feels like something you would hear him say in any movie. Sounds like something Scar would say.
Yeah, I can see Scar saying that. He does say something similar to that, doesn't he, Scar? About something boring.
Yeah, when I said that, I thought there is a similar line in there somewhere, but for the life of me, I can't think of it right now.
I think it was something that was about being boring or something like that. I can like picture him sitting there and, you know, using his paw to capture a mouse or something like that and saying something.
Yeah. It's right in the opening scene where we're introduced to Scar. He's playing with a mouse, if I remember correctly. You know, talking about the Lion King here all of a sudden makes me realize, too, I don't know that I ever thought about the fact that we have Jeremy Irons in two consecutive years playing a villainous brother, though in this movie he's the villainous brother of another villain. But still, he was playing high-profile brothers 2 years in a row.
That's right. Well, he's either the brother of Alan Rickman or the brother of James Earl Jones. That's also right. pretty amazing.
Yep.
You know, to think about it from that perspective. Interesting. Yeah, I mean, Jeremy Irons is a great actor. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
I'm still always throwing out around the fact that, you know, that this is the guy who won, you know, watching Simon and saying this is the guy who won an Oscar for playing Klaus von Bülow, you know, 4 years before this.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is always kind of the point in Jeremy Irons' career that I think of, you know, kind of there being a shift. I mean, not to say that he didn't continue to do prestigious roles after this. He did, but you know, he always kind of struck me as being an actor. You know, he was, you know, an Oscar contender regularly and that type of thing, you know, up till this. And then, you know, it's after we get to Die Hard with a Vengeance that we start to see, you know, some of the other things pop up, like, you know, being in The Man with the Iron Mask or Dungeons and Dragons or, you know, things like that. So, yeah, I've always thought of this film as being a little bit of a shift in his career.
Yeah, well, I think that was part of it. I think it's the same thing with Alan Rickman. The two of them were not known as villains beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're taking, you know, suave and sophisticated people playing suave and sophisticated characters who are actually villains.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the way, I mean, that's the way I look at it.
You know, do you see The Beekeeper yet that he's in this year, where he's a villain as well?
Yes.
I had a lot of fun with The Beekeeper.
with
Jason.
Oh, Jason. I was thinking of some Eckhart movie that came out around the same time. That was The
Bricklayer. Yeah, I was going to say it's another one where it's like an occupation.
Exactly. Yeah, I've seen both. I think of Jeremy Irons like John Malkovich from that perspective.
Yeah, I can see that.
That, you know, the type of roles that he ends up taking on, you know, along the way. I haven't been able to find that quote from he says, "Oh goody." I think that might be it. There's a conversation between Simba and Scar where he goes, "Hey, Uncle Scar, guess what?" He goes, "I despise guessing games. I'm gonna be king of Pride Rock. Oh goody. My dad just showed me the whole kingdom and I'm gonna rule it all. Yes. Well, forgive me for not leaping for joy. Bad back, you know. Hey, Uncle Scar, when I'm king, what'll that'll make you? A monkey's uncle. And he goes, "You're so weird." He goes, "You have no idea."
Yes.
I have a feeling that's what we're thinking of here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think so. Well, and then Targo starts getting upset and turns to Simon and goes, "I told you not to toy with him." And I love, I just bought this Scar. I love Simon's response. He goes, "Thank you. That's very helpful." he's basically saying, "Tell me something I don't know."
Yeah. You're like watching the whole movie now with thinking of him as Scar, you know, it totally fits.
Yeah. Well, Scar's not as blonde and blue eyed.
No. Yes. No, exactly.
But I mean, I like the infighting here between Simon and Targo, because it tells us about what's going to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like it from that perspective. And then as they're talking, the truck comes out of the tunnel, and it's being flagged along, and it looks like it's raining out.
It's raining. Yeah, it's raining now.
You know,
because you can see that in other moments of the film where there's a bit of rain going on. Because I think when, I mean, not to spoil, but I think when John pops out of the viaduct a bit later on and Zeus finds him, that it's raining as well.
Right, I believe so.
But it wasn't raining at Yankee Stadium a few minutes ago. Or at the school.
That's correct. And that's right. I don't think it even rained. I don't think it ever rains in the school.
Yeah.
Notice they're just wet there because they're so far away.
Yeah. I mean, just because it's raining in one part of New York doesn't mean the whole city is getting rained on. So, yeah, it's not outside the realm of possibility.
No, but the question is it rain or is it water being, you know, being like splashed or something like that?
I think it looks like rain, but
yeah, it looks like rain. But we'll have to keep an eye on that.
I mean, we already said last time that the dam, you know, looks not totally well sealed because there are water drips all over the place.
That's right. So we'll have to wait and see. And then Simon takes some more aspirin Yeah, he's addicted to those things.
Oh, every time he chugs the aspirin in this thing, it makes me cringe. Number one, because it's like, that's not the way you're supposed to do that. You know, you don't just randomly chug a bunch of aspirins. You also don't take it with water. I'm sensitive to this. I have multiple family members from both my side of the family and my wife's side of the family who had stomach issues at some point. And the explanation that came down was you should not be taking pills without drinking water. It actually can, you know, cause problems with the lining of your stomach and cause bleeding and things like that. And so I'm always like, whenever I see people chugging down pills and not drinking water in movies, I'm like, no, don't do that. Don't do that.
Well, we want Simon to die anyway, so it doesn't matter.
yeah. The bad guy does it. It's okay.
That's right. and then Targo screams at him and says something very strange that I don't understand. He says, you've jeopardized the mission and the contract. Okay. So I understand he's jeopardized the mission, but what's the contract? Does this mean that there's someone else who's hired them to do this?
It could. I've always
been under the impression that for them, this was Simon's the head guy, and you know, they want to create their own army to be able to take over any country that they want, or fight for any country that they want, or buy any country they want, whatever it is. But then why does he say in the contract? Who has contracted them?
Maybe he's referring to a contract between him and Simon, you know, like, because I mean, all the different bad guys had to have been hired in some way, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, it is a misleading. It's a hard to understand line.
Right. It doesn't really make much sense, because again, the question is, you know, maybe what you're talking about is maybe it's Targo has been contracted to do this.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Maybe it's but it makes it sound as if somebody hired them to do this, you know, which would be completely mind blowing, because you have to think about the fact that, okay, who has hired Simon and Targo and all of these, German terrorists, you know, to do this job.
And that could like open up a whole realm of possibilities where it's like, okay, you know, would a fourth film after this, you know, as opposed to the one that we got, have gone into, all right, who hired Simon? And for that matter, could we assume that maybe the same guy was actually controlling what Hans was up to in the first film and can that's make right. it all it's, connect?
That's right. It's Hans and Simon's father.
There you go. Whoa. Who could play Hans and Simon's father? That's a question I have never thought about before. Oh, Anthony my goodness. Hopkins. It could be Hopkins. But at the same time, when like Hopkins shows up in some of these like franchises that have multiple installments, you're just going, really, Hopkins? I mean, like, look at him in Mission Impossible 2. Look at him in Transformers movie he was in, you know?
Okay, so who would you say would be a good person?
I don't know. I'm racking my brain here to think of who would have been the right age. It would have had to be, you know, like, you know, European. I mean, Hopkins is, you know, a logical choice, but I'm struggling to think of anybody else here.
Well, you got the McTiernan connection, so maybe bring in Connery.
Connery, I was just about to say Connery. Yeah, make it Connery. Of course, Connery. I mean,
Connery couldn't play a villain though. That's the problem.
Would he have to be? Would he have to be? What is their nationality? German? Would he have to be German? Can Connery be German? He was a Spaniard. Highlander.
I think he could be. He could be German. But again, did Connery ever play a villain like this?
He was a villain. He was a villain in that Avengers movie, but you know, that's not a great example of anything.
That's not the real Avengers anyway.
Come on. Yeah. That's that other Avengers. Yeah. I mean, I started thinking of like former Bonds, when I started thinking that way. But I mean, really, Connery and Moore were the only ones that would have been old enough to do it. Dalton wouldn't.
I can't see Moore doing it.
No. Yeah. Oh, it's an interesting question.
Richard Attenborough? Nah.
A little too. He's too jolly. He's Santa Claus.
James Coburn.
Coburn could work. Coburn and Irons actually look a little like each other in some ways. There's some similarities in their faces. I like that one. That could be good.
I'm trying to think if there's someone else that's because we're talking, it has to be from the age, you know, you have to be someone who in the 90s could have been, you know, old enough. Not Nicholson, right?
No.
He couldn't.
Bronson just flashed through my mind, but Bronson wouldn't work. Bronson wouldn't work as the father of these two.
Right. Not Harvey Keitel.
No.
Not Pacino. I wouldn't put Brando there, even though Brando would be perfect. No, age-wise, Brando would be perfect, but I don't think...
I think you're opening up a whole can of worms if you try to put Brando in this franchise.
What about Dennis Hopper?
I don't know. Dennis Hopper is a little too much of a loose cannon. I don't know that I would go there.
Right. No, I think Coburn is the best bet that I can think of right now.
I mean, I think if it had actually happened, I think you're right with your first impression. I think that Hopkins would have been the person they would have thought of first for it. And who knows, it could have worked. But, you know, just like I was saying, based on what Hopkins has delivered in some of these other, you know, franchise movies, I'm not totally sold. So.
Right. Ooh, Paul Newman. Yeah, I don't know. All right. Oh, well. we can keep wishing. And so Targo, you know, is just had enough. And he's screaming. And he goes, "We are vulnerable till we reach the ship." And then he, as he's walking behind Simon, we see Simon once again pinching his nose. And he screams, "I'm going to put an end to this." And the shot ends with, Targo just getting pissed off about it all. So we're going to have to wait until tomorrow to find out what happens here. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
The only other thing I had in my notes is that there weren't, you know, we mentioned that it was raining when they came out of the viaduct here. But also there doesn't seem to be any legitimate workers for the viaduct on this end of things either, because otherwise there would probably be some surprise over all these people walking out of these trucks carrying machine guns and things like that. But there doesn't seem to be anybody legit there to realize that these bad guys are there.
I agree with you on that, but they probably just would have killed anyone who was there if they needed them.
True. Probably a good thing that they're not there then.
Right. Okay, so the script is pretty much the same, but it has a few differences. So it starts off with Simon saying, "Nils." Okay, he goes, "Nils is dead, f***ed." Targo, alarmed, turns to Simon. Close to Simon, his jaw twitches. His eyes glint. McLean and Simon. McLean says, "So are three more of the Eurotrash All-Star team. Your boys at the bank nearly got me. The truck you're driving contains $13 billion in gold bullion. Let's not be rash, John. Would a deal be out of the question? Sure. How about you get out and bend over and I'll drive my truck up your ass."
A little more graphic in the script.
Yeah, a little bit more. Such a way with words. And then John says, "Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker." McLean clicks off his CV, ending intercut. Simon's truck. Simon clicks off his CV. Targo is glaring at him. "Fool, I told you not to underestimate this man." And then it says, the last of Simon's trucks rumbles across the steel ramp bridges, bridging the electrical conduit trench. This last truck shakes one of the ramps loose. the ramp falls into the conduit trench. That's how the script ends for this minute. So it's pretty much the same, but as you said, it's a little more graphic here. I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're fine with the way that they do this. Okay, so every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Revenge / Sibling Rivalry Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is related to either revenge or to some sort of sibling rivalry story. So what have you got for us, Todd?
Well, it's funny. When I read this, I was like, oh, well, I instantly know what to talk about here, because this is a story that has my brother and I laugh about to this day. My brother, I love my brother, but we're very different people. And when we were kids, we didn't always get along. We definitely had our moments of arguing and fighting and such. And I remember at some point we were, you know, deep in some yelling argument about something or other. And my mom was completely fed up with us and, you know, sent us to each of our rooms, which were just around the corner from each other. And so, you know, not content to just sit in our rooms and, you know, let things chill down. We decided to continue the argument by passing notes to each other underneath our doors. So, you know, we were writing these notes that were just like, you know, you're so stupid, you're such an idiot, you know, all these things like that, and slide them under each other's doors. So, you know, I would write something and slide it under his door, and a few minutes later he would come back and send another note under my door, and it just kept going back and forth, and it culminated with one of us, and I'm pretty sure I think it was me, writing as the note to my brother, "You're a butthead," and then drawing a picture of a person with a literal butt as the head, you know, and sliding that under the door. And that was the thing that eventually just kind of defused the situation, because we just cracked up and thought it was so funny. And, you know, here we are, you know, probably, I mean, it's at least 40 years later, probably, and we still laugh about that moment. It just comes up randomly. You know, we're there at some family gathering, and it's like, remember the butthead thing? And we just start laughing. So it was a contentious moment at the time, but it has brought many decades of laughter since then.
So anytime you want to crack your brother up, you just send him a little message saying, "Hey, butthead."
Yeah, I should totally do that. I should like instant message him on Facebook or send him a text, you know, with a little drawing of a person with a butt for a head. Yeah, he'd probably love it.
Hey, if it works, why not? All right. So, Todd, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Todd Liebenow?
Yeah, so the podcast is called The Forgotten Film Cast. Look for that wherever you find your podcasts. The blog is Forgotten Films, which is at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. And you can follow me on X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, at Forgotten Films. It's films with a Z.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Reel Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can send me an email to moviereelminute@moviereel.net. Or you can visit my website at moviereelminute.com. So, Todd, you want to come back tomorrow to find out what happens?
We've got to do it. We got to finish this off. We got to see what happens at the school. We got to see what's going on with the dam. Yeah, we got to see if it's raining. You know, we got to see if Zeus decided to just stay at Yankee Stadium and watch the game that's still 6 hours away from starting. Yeah, let's do it.
All right, excellent. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Johnny comes marching home again. Hurrah, hurrah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hurrah, hurrah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout. The ladies, they will all turn out. And we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.